Okay, the mic is live. Good. Ni hao. Wacha Adam Shapiro, Senior Program Manager for Microsoft Windows Devices. I am the person who is the designer for many of our driver development tools and environments. So if you've used a little bit of the driver development in Visual Studio, this is something that I've worked on personally, as well as things like static driver verifier, driver verifier, and the dev fund tests, as well as the debuggers inside Visual Studio. So today I want to talk about this great tool set, this world-class tool set that we are giving you with the WDK and with Visual Studio to help you build, not only build drivers, but test them and debug them and deploy them as well. Today we'll talk about how you can use these tools to find bugs in your drivers using the various dev fund tests and the driver verifier tools. We'll talk about the different ways that you can set up a debugger. There are actually three ways you can do debugging in Windows, and I will talk about all three. How to use symbols and symbol files, and we'll do a very extensive, very big demo of actually debugging a real crash dump that we got from one of you, one of our customers, and how we found root cause using the tool set. Finding bugs in drivers. So one thing I will tell you is that the very first thing that you should be doing all of the time is testing. It seems obvious. Yes, one of the best ways to find problems with your drivers is to test. It's interesting, many of our partners will not do very much testing initially, and when they start to build the driver, they do a little bit of testing, and then at the very, very end, right before everything is going to ship, that's when they do all of their testing. And I would say, okay, better than nothing, but it would really be better to be testing at every stage throughout the life cycle. And I will talk about those stages and the specific tests that we are giving you to help you test at the bring up phase, at the reliability phase, at the stress phase, and also before you ship for verification and certification testing as well. But really, it's something that you should be doing throughout the life cycle. Of course, if you use all of the tools that we give you, you will have higher quality drivers, lower support costs, less people on the telephone yelling at you, yes, and also get to market faster. The earlier in the cycle that you find the bugs, the quicker you can ship the product to market. Seems obvious. Of course it seems obvious. The other thing that I want to point out is that we're flexible enough that we give you multiple ways to test and multiple ways to debug. And the point is that if you're used to using another operating system, I'm not allowed to say which one, you might be used to debugging in a certain way. And we have tools that debug similar to the way that you're used to. We also have tools that debug in a way that's more Windows-friendly or Windows-like. And it's really up to you to choose the tool set that you feel comfortable with. So I said that we give you tests for each phase. It turns out that Microsoft ships a set of 42 core functionality tests called device fundamentals or dev fund test. And there are versions of these for each phase in the development cycle. So there's a version that you run as soon as your driver loads, as soon as the driver is just the bare skeleton of the driver, you can do some testing. And then as you add more functionality, there are tests that you can run that will expose more bugs at the development and integration phase. And then there's a version of this, let's say the same tests for stress and reliability, and a version of that same test that you would run just before you're ready to publish your driver, however you're going to publish, either through Microsoft or through some other mechanism. If you do this, if you test early and often, you are much more likely to have a higher quality product, and you are much more likely to get to market faster with lower cost. So this set of core tests, as I said, are called device fundamentals or DevFund. And they include things like PNP test, power management, sleep cycle, device I/O stress, fuzz testing, CPU testing, general tests that apply to every device, core tests, and I would encourage you to take advantage of them. One of the nice things is, I already mentioned that there's a version available for each phase, so a version for bring up, a version for stress, etc. There are also versions for multiple Windows editions, so a special version for desktop, special version for mobile, etc. And you can choose to run them actually three ways. You can run them from the WDK, and I will show you a demonstration of this. You can run it standalone from a USB stick, which is nice. And you can also run from the HLK, Hardware Lab Kit is the new name, Hardware Lab Kit. So same tests, three different environments, up to you how you choose to run them. So let's go ahead and do a bit of a demo. Now, one of the requests that we have, how many people, by the way, have used the HLK to run in the past certification tests? Has anybody? So a few of you. And you know that the HLK is very good, but if you only want to run one test, it's a lot of things to set up in order to run only one test. In fact, you have to have a special server and a network and the clients. It's a lot to do if you only want to run one test, two tests, and only want to target a specific device. We've heard from our customers that, well, let's say I'm having a specific problem, a specific bug or failure on a particular device, and I don't want to run the whole HLK. I only want to test that one device. Well, here's a way you can do it. You can actually export the HLK tests for DevFund to a USB key. And I have done exactly that. I have DevFund tests on a USB key. And there's a small setup program that I can run on any computer. Takes just a few seconds to install. And then I can run a DevFund test on my PC. So why don't I do that now as a demonstration? So I'm going to type run-interactive. And I spelled it wrong. Interactive. And what this is saying is I want to be able to choose the device and choose the test. If I want to, I can include that information in a command line or a script and automatically test multiple devices, multiple tests. But right now, I will show you testing one device, one test. So I'll run this. Oops. It helps if you are in the right directory, yes? Yay. Okay. Okay, so it launches a PowerShell script, and it basically lists all the devices that are on the system. And I'm going to go ahead here and choose something very simple. I'm going to choose the power button because it's the simplest device. And it's enumerated as number 44. Let me check that again. Power button number 44. 44. Now, it's going to say, well, what test do you want to run? And you'll notice that here are all the DevFund tests. So there's sleep with I/O, simple I/O, reinstall test, rebooting test, plug and play tests, all different types of tests. I'm going to choose a simple fuzz test. And what this does is it just sends random ioctls to the device to see if the device will crash. That's number 32. So this is a very good test to run early to make sure that your interfaces are okay. And I will run it. Now, it's telling me that it doesn't have to change anything. And it's going to go ahead and run the test. And do you see this messy command line? This is the command line that you would have had to type manually in the old HLK world to get this to run. So now it's easy to run. And it's going ahead and running the test, and it completed. And it looks successful. And in fact, I can go to the directory on my USB key and view the results and find out exactly what happened. And it tells me exactly what it did. So it enumerated the power button, It tried to enable the button. It tried to disable the button. It sent some ioctls to it that were, you know, garbage, junk, just to see if it could crash it. And then it said it couldn't find any attack service, so it succeeded. The test was successful. So this is very nice if you want to just run a single test at a time. You can also do exactly the same thing from inside Visual Studio. Here I have the Visual Studio interface. And if I go to the driver menu, which I get when I install the WDK test, and I can do new test group, and this does exactly the same thing. I can create a test group, and I can pick any of those DevFun tests that I want to run for any particular device. So here's that fuzz test. I can just select it, and this way I can select multiple tests to run in sequence. They don't run in parallel, they run in sequence in WDK. So two different ways to do exactly the same thing. Now I know that there is a talk later today on HLK, and they will also talk about a way that you can automate running this in a lab scenario with HLK for many, many, many machines and many phones simultaneously. Good enough. Let's go back to our deck. So testing is, of course, something that is very necessary, but it's not enough. If you test your driver, you will find bugs, but you will also miss finding certain bugs, because if you do not hit that bug in a code path, guess what? You won't find it. So the challenge is that you only find the bugs in the particular code path that you are exercising. So this is good, but again, not enough. You need to do more to discover additional bugs. A very useful tool is to use something that we provide called Driver Verifier. This is a runtime verification tool. And what it does is it wraps your driver with rules to check for very bad things. So there is a rule that says, for example, if the driver allocates memory and then deallocates memory and then tries to use that same memory again, you should stop, you should crash, because this is a bad thing. So there are probably something like a couple hundred different conditions that Driver Verifier checks for. And if it sees one of these fatal conditions, it will generate what's called a bug check. It will stop the computer, and it will write a file that tells you what is potentially going wrong. So it is a very important thing to use Driver Verifier, especially when you're testing, to find these bugs that you would not necessarily find in just day-to-day tests. Much more likely to catch it than just testing alone. Now, here's my cool animation. There we go. So even this is better than testing alone, but it's still not quite enough. It shows the presence of a bug, but you still might miss something. And for that, we have a tool called Static Driver Verifier, which does code analysis and actually looks at the driver code to see if there is a potential for an issue. And again, it has special rules for determining things that may crash the computer, may be very bad. We're not demonstrating Static Driver Verifier today because it is still under development, but hopefully soon I'll be able to show you that as well. Okay, so when Driver Verifier bug checks, as I said, it generates a bug check file. It stops the computer and creates what's called a crash dump file, which contains debugging information. And of course, we all know the blue screen of death on the right side. You know what that means. That's not good. So what I'm saying to you is you really should take advantage of Driver Verifier, because you will see when we do our debugging demonstration how important the information generated by Driver Verifier, or DV, is exactly. It really does help you to find the root cause of a problem. Now, there are multiple ways to configure or turn on or off or customize Driver Verifier. The easiest way is just by running a test. Now, if I go back to my USB key scenario, You'll notice that when I did run-interactive, it started the test, and it said no changes necessary, no changes needed. It's because I've run this test before, but normally what would happen is that the computer would automatically configure driver verifier for the rules that apply for the particular driver that you are testing. So I'm testing the power button. It would automatically turn on things that are that relate to power management. And if I had a problem, it would stop the computer and generate the crash bug. I don't want to show you turning that automatically, but you just have to take my word for it that when you run any dev fun test, driver verifier is turned on automatically with the right settings. Now, that's good, but better is to be able to configure it yourself in a custom way for multiple drivers and multiple conditions. And you can do that with the verifier.exe command line or with the GUI, and you can also do it in Visual Studio. So rather than go through the slide, I'll actually show you this. One thing I wanted to point out is when you get the crash dump file, the file will often contain a link to MSDN documentation, which explains what caused the computer to crash. And it's surprising how good or how accurate these messages are. Several years ago, you would get a message and you'd click on it or look at it and you'd think, that's not what's going on here. But we've done a lot of work in this last cycle to really improve the quality of the messages, and they are very good about describing exactly what has gone wrong. So let me show you a demonstration of how you can set driver verifier levels. So I'll go back here. The easiest way is just to do it from a command line. So I can just type verifier.exe, and this brings up a small graphical program which allows me to tailor what devices do I want to enable or test and what conditions do I want to look for. So you can just say use the standard ones, which is just the most popular rules. But, you know, none of us want to do that. We want to do the best. So we're going to create a custom setting, and it's going to say, well, what rules do you want to enable? So you see there are rules for Urkel checking and pool tracking and I/O verification, deadlock detection, security check, ERP logging, many, many different rules to look for. So you can say, if my driver does any of these things, stop the computer. Something is wrong. So I will say that I want to do Urkel checking and DMA checking. It doesn't matter. You can pick as many or as few as you like. And then you say, what driver? So every driver, you can turn it on for every driver. To be honest, I would not recommend turning rules on for every driver because the system performance will slow down quite significantly, but be selective. So I'm going to choose selected drivers, and remember that I cared about my power button driver. So let's see if we can find that power button. And in fact, here it is somewhere. Oh, it's a button.sys. Okay. There it is. So I'm saying turn these rules on for this driver, and I would click finish, and it would enable those rules. And then when I run a test, if anything bad happens, it will create the crash dump file that I can diagnose. It's also possible to do this from within Visual Studio for a particular project. It's not that interesting, and to be honest, I think since I am the designer of this feature, I can do it. I'm going to take it out of Visual Studio. It's much better to have one clear user interface than three separate that do not agree. So you can do it now in VS, but I think we're going to take that out. I think this will be the one that survives. Okay. Let's go ahead and go back to our presentation. The next thing I want to talk about is setting up the debugger. Now, some of you may have gone to the lab that is just finishing now, which was talking about how to use WinDBG and how to debug live versus CrashDump. There is another opportunity, I will tell you, tomorrow morning, I believe at 10 a.m. in Mansion 2, there is a hands-on lab specifically on using WinDBG and doing CrashDump analysis. I would encourage you to come. It's a special lab because we had so many people today, we're going to run it again tomorrow. Please come if you can. So the way that the debugger engine works in for Microsoft products is really there is one engine, but there are multiple interfaces, multiple ways to use it. You can use the debugger inside Visual Studio, you can use WinDBG, you can use KD at the command line, and there's even a programmable interface to use as well for the debugger. The point is that even though the interface is different, it's exactly the same debugging engine underneath. Same experience, in no matter what tool you choose, it's really up to you. If you're comfortable using the command line tools, great. If you want a graphical user interface, also this is available. So it's really up to you. Generally, when we're debugging drivers, we are talking about kernel mode debugging. Now, it's true that you can debug a user mode driver, but these days we are actually recommending you use the kernel mode debugger for everything. It is, at this point, the most stable debugger that we have and will work on any remote process. So the situation is usually you have a development computer which is running, let's say, Visual Studio, or at a minimum, WinDBG and the WDK. You connect to a target device, which can be either a computer or a phone or a MinoBoard Max, really anything, over a transport. Now, it used to be that debugging was only supported on a very few transports, so serial debugging, name pipes, that's kind of about it. These days, the transport can be many things. Probably the most stable is Ethernet. Network debugging. This is what I would recommend that you use. It works beautifully. And in fact, you don't even need a real network. If you have two computers, you can just hook them together with what's called a crossover cable, a network cable that has the wires switched to simulate a network, and that will work just fine. If you like, you can use USB 3. That works beautifully too. 1394, but I wouldn't recommend it. Go for Ethernet debugging. This is your safest bet. Okay. So there are several different ways that you can set up the target machine for debugging. One of the easiest is to use Visual Studio to prepare a target. And again, if you come to the first lab tomorrow morning, which I think is at 9 a.m. in Mansion 2, there is a hands-on lab where you actually set up a remote machine for debugging using Visual Studio. Again, I would encourage you to come, and I'll show a quick demo of that. It's also possible to do it manually by using BCD edit at the command line. I'm not going to show you this, but this is just in the deck for your reference. Again, it doesn't matter. Choose a way that is comfortable and easy for you to do. Either works just fine. And also, again, you can do it through USB 3. Really not a problem. Will work just fine. So let me show you a demonstration of how you would do this in Visual Studio. Now, I have Visual Studio here, but I don't have a target computer set up. But I will show you where in Visual Studio that you would do this. And please do come to the lab tomorrow, and you can try it out yourself. On the driver menu, select Test and Configure Devices. What this does is it sets up a connection to a remote computer. So I actually had previously configured this to talk to a Sharks Cove board, but I can say Add New Device, and you give the computer a friendly name, so you can say My PC, doesn't matter. And say, is the target device either a computer or a phone, a mobile device? And it works just the same way. whether it's mobile or whether it's computer. The beauty of this is that if you want to deploy a driver to a phone, it makes it very easy. If you want to deploy a test to a phone or a PC, it makes it very, very easy. It's the same way, same way. And then in the network host name, you would put the name of the computer or alternatively, the IP address of the device. Now, I will admit that if you download the preview and you try this and you try putting the network name of the PC, it may not work. We'll fix it. But if you put the IP address, it will work for sure. So you can definitely try it now by using the IP address. By the time we ship, both will work. Right now, use the IP address. Okay. And so I'll just cancel this because I don't have another computer, but that's how you would set it up. And then when you build or we want to deploy, you simply choose the PC you want to deploy to, and there it is in Visual Studio. Quite straightforward. All right. So when you do get around to debugging, there's something called symbols and symbol files, which become very important. If you have a computer that crashes and you don't have the code, it's hard to figure out what went wrong. And even if you do have the code, you need to have a way to correlate the compiled binary to the source code. And that's what symbols do. They map the names of variables, addresses, registers in the compiled code to the source code so that you can figure out what happened. You can correlate it. They're stored in something called PDB files, and you can get these in several ways. There are PDB files that are for the operating system, and you can download those from Microsoft, from our what's called symbol server. But when you make a custom driver, the compilation process, the build process, generates for you a local symbols file that represents your driver, and you will need that to debug it. Okay. When you're in the debugger, one of the first things that you have to do is tell the debugger what symbols to use. Otherwise, nothing is meaningful. You need symbols to make the debug process meaningful. So you do that by setting what's called using the sympath command or sympath plus command. One of the features that we introduced in our last release was this .sympath, and if you do nothing, it will automatically try to go to the internet and download the symbols for the operating system that you are using, the specific version of Windows that you are using. So first thing I always do, .sympath. If you have a custom build or special symbols, you can say .sympath plus and point to local symbols cache on your machine. And it's probably the easiest thing. And then, of course, symbols are what are called lazy loaded, which means they are not loaded into memory until they are used. So if you want to force them to be loaded into memory so that you can see everything, you use .reload command to force the reloading of the symbols. So again, I have many slides in the deck that follow that are about specific debugging commands. Rather than going through each one, I would rather do a real scenario where I take a driver crash, look at it, and try to find the root cause. It's much more interesting, don't you think? Okay, so let's go ahead and do that. So I'll go ahead and bring up Visual Studio on my computer. Let me close a few windows down here. And I'm going to open a crash dump file. So file, open, crash dump. So remember what a crash dump is. If you have driver verifier enabled and it violates one of those rules like Urkel checking, DMA, memory access, the system will stop and generate this file to help you find the issue. So I'll go ahead and load this crash dump file into memory. And this will automatically launch the debugger. Be aware that since the files are quite large, they can take sometimes a minute or two to load, but I seem to be okay. So here's my debugger. Now, some of you may be used to using a tool called WinDBG. This is the Visual Studio debugger. In terms of functionality, it's exactly the same. It's just inside VS, so it is more convenient if you are writing code to use this, but works just the same way. So I have an immediate window that tells me that I've been able to load the crash dump. So the very first thing that I want to do is load my symbols. Since I'm a very bad typist, I've prepared in advance my command so I can just cut, paste, and copy. I hope you forgive me for that, but it makes it better for you. So the very first thing I do is .symfix. Now, if I were connected to the internet, this would automatically download symbols for the operating system, and I'll just click it. I'm going to get an error because I don't have an internet connection. So luckily, I have local symbols that I can use. So let's go ahead and load my local symbols. Okay, and there it is. It found my local symbols. And you see that it says deferred. So what must I do? .reload/F to force loading the symbols. Now here is something interesting. You will notice that I'm getting lots and lots of error messages. It doesn't mean that anything is wrong. It means simply that I do not have symbols for every single module loaded in the system right now. That can be fine, because if I have symbols for the modules that I care about, I can still debug. And in fact, if I do LM, it will show me what modules are actually loaded. And you'll notice the ones that I really care about, which are the Endis ones, I do indeed have symbols for those modules that I'm going to debug. So getting an error message that says you don't have symbols is not always true. It just means you do not have all symbols. So do an LM to check for what symbols you do have, is my recommendation. Okay, I think I've already done a reload, but let's, for safety, we will force a reload. There we go. And the next thing that I'm going to do is set the source path. So what I'm saying is, where is the source code for the driver that I want to analyze? And the reason I need this is to correlate the actual source code with the machine code. So I'll do that. These things are not that important. I think I'm just going to skip them. But probably the most important thing that you can do for a crash dump is this command, which is bang analyze. So exclamation analyze. What this does is it gives you a high-level overview of the problem in your crash dump. It doesn't tell you everything, but it gives you hints on where to look for the root cause of the problem. Let's take a look at some of the output that I have here. So it gave me actually quite a lot of information. And it told me some things right off the bat. It told me that probably, the reason that the computer crashed was that this rule was violated. Driver IRQL not less or equal. So what this is saying is that I tried to do something at either too high or too low an IRQL level. Or, in my experience, it can also mean I tried to use memory that was deallocated already. That's usually what this particular bug happens to mean. And in fact, it can tell me, I'm pretty sure that that's actually the case, because if I look at this first argument, this is telling me this is the memory it was trying to read, and it's basically a zero value. So that's a problem right away. If I was trying to read this location, this isn't a valid memory address in Windows. That's telling me something that's pretty bad. So if I keep going down, I can get some more information about what happened when the computer crashed. I can look at the current stack frame. Now, the current stack frame will contain the registers, the value of the registers, the value of the variables, exactly when the computer crashed. And this is also extremely useful to figure out what has gone wrong. So in order to do that, I'll use the trap command. And in fact, what's nice is I can just cut, paste, and copy. And what it's really doing here is pointing me to the top of the stack frame for a set of variables when the computer crashed. So I'll do set the context, and you see that automatically it tells me these are the variables that were on top of the stack at the moment of crash. So I have interrupt, context, baud rate, extension, result. And something should peek out. Which of these values looks suspect? Which one looks wrong already? You can tell something looks very wrong. Devin, what do you think? Which one looks wrong? Just guess. You're right, it's result. It's the last one, because that was that same memory address that we were looking at before. And again, it's not a valid memory address. So something is not quite right. Okay, so we know there's a bad value. We know that it's caused a crash. The question is why? Where did this value come from? And how can I find out where this value was set previously in the driver code? Well, one of the nice things that I can do is actually go ahead and try to correlate this to the call stack. So, by the way, there are many ways you can do things. In Visual Studio, you can do what I'm doing right now, which is issue these commands. And I hear all the modules loaded on the call stack. But there's also windows which give me exactly the same information in a much friendlier way. So I can get what modules are loaded, and it can tell me here's where I am now, WDF serial, serial page fault, IRQL, blah, blah, blah. I can also just look at the call stack window, and you can always look at the locals window to see the variables that are associated with that stack frame. So the point is, many ways to do it. Command line, as well as graphical user interface, same information. It's just whatever you like to do, whatever is easy for you. If you had any breakpoints set, you could look at the breakpoint window or the output window to see what is happening. It's really up to you to choose what you want to do. So one thing that I will do is we have a special tool. If I click on this part of the call frame, because I have set the source code, it automatically correlates the source code for this module and the breakpoint so that I can see what went wrong. So it's telling me that when it hit this module, this was the line of code that was at fault. Result equals status success. And we know that the value of the result was essentially zero. So this is a problem. So we know that this line of code is bad, or it's not that it's bad, it's that the result of the function call is returning zero when it shouldn't. It should return something else. The question is, how was that value generated? Well, there are multiple ways you can find this out. I can one by one, the old way is walk the stack and look for values that are there, but that's kind of difficult. An easy way to do this now, here, let me get back to where I was. An easier way to do this is by going to the debug menu. And choose this option, show call stack on code map. And what it does is it gives you a graphical representation of which module called which module called which function, et cetera, et cetera. You can see the entire chain of events that related to that particular module. Let me pop this window out because it's a little bit hard to see. Whoops. Where is it? Layout. Sorry, it takes me a minute. But what's nice is that it can actually show you, for example, which module called which one. And I can see that I need to look for a module called WDF serial event IO device control. is where that variable was previously set, that zero variable. And what's nice is, as soon as I click on it, look what it does. It brings me to the code, the exact code that caused the problem. So I am seeing a break, right? And if I kind of look up, and I look through my locals window to look at the value of all the variables for my current stack frame, can someone tell me which variable is suspect? Which one has that kind of almost zero value? Is it buffer? Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that looks bad. So let's look in the code for where this variable called buffer is set. And in fact, it is set right here. Buffer equals pvoid size of zero device extension. And it's returning zero. So that's telling me that I need to look at the value of this constant or variable serial device extension because it is wrong, it is misset. If it's returning size of this and it's a zero, obviously the problem is that this constant, this value is incorrect, is set incorrectly somewhere in the program. So what I wanted to show you was that I can use the tools to discover overall what the problem is, and then walk the chain of dependencies to find where a particular value is set or modified so that we can go ahead and fix the problem. Good. So we just saw an example of what's called crash dump debugging, which is great when you have a crash dump. You can also use the debugger in the more traditional Linux way, where you are stepping through live code and setting breakpoints, and that will work perfectly well as well. There are additional commands to help you do that. So as I said, I wasn't going to walk through every slide here. This is really for your reference. But we talked about the K commands for showing the stack. We talked about the bang analyze command for showing the contents of a crash dump and trying to find root cause. You can use DV to display local variables or DT for types. Again, I could have just pulled up the variables window inside the Visual Studio Debugger and saw exactly the same information. It doesn't matter. I can use the D command to dump memory, the R command for registers. And again, we saw an example of this one, load LM for loaded modules, which modules are in memory. And this tells us, again, which modules we have symbols for, which is very important. You can set breakpoints at the command line using the BP and B commands. But even easier, and in fact, let me switch back to my other computer. I would encourage you, if you're using Visual Studio Debugger, it is even easier to do that. So all I really need to do is click on the side of the code line where I want to set a breakpoint, and the breakpoint is set. Easy. So it used to be that I would have to find the symbol name, I would have to find a variable name, set a breakpoint manually. I might make a mistake because the lines of code were misnumbered. This is much easier. Just click on the line of code you want to set a breakpoint on. I'm not going to talk about this. I'll just pass it. So this is also a very useful command called unassemble, U for unassemble. What you can do is, if you are at a breakpoint and you want to see the actual machine code that is generated for that particular line of code, you type U for unassemble. And so for a line of C++ code, you can see the equivalent machine code, move, push, pop, etc. Load register, read register, etc., can be very, very useful for debugging. And of course, you can use the stepping command, so P to step next, T for trace, G for go up, G for go to resume. Or you can just use the visual equivalents inside Visual Studio. It doesn't matter. Use what you like. Either will work just fine. So really, the main message I wanted you to take away was that we're giving you a very rich and complete toolset for debugging Windows programs and Windows drivers. It's the combination of the Visual Studio and the WDK that really let you do this kind of debugging. And also, we are giving you, essentially for free, the DevFund tests that you can use not only at bring up, but at all phases for every device that you may manufacture to ensure basic functionality across all device classes. The other thing is that I can't stress highly enough is please turn on driver verifier to make sure that you catch as many bugs as you can as early in the life cycle of driver development as you can. There are some additional labs coming up this afternoon. There is another lab at 3 o'clock on bringing up a sensor driver on the Shark's Cove board in Mansion 2. I would encourage you to go. It's a very interesting lab. We have real ADXL345 devices to play with on the Shark's Cove. It's a fun lab. There's also a lab about doing testing with the HLK this afternoon. And tomorrow morning, because we were full this morning, we will repeat the getting started with driver development. So that's the Visual Studio basic experience. And then a special lab on debugging crash dumps at 10:10 tomorrow morning. And I would encourage you to go as well. I'll be there also, and you can come and ask me questions as you like. So thank you very much. And I think I will take a few questions, and my friend Devin will help me understand the question. I couldn't hear. Ah, okay. This is a very good question. You can actually make it yourself. So inside WDK, when you install the WDK, let me show you where it is. It's always in the same place. Program files, x86, Windows kits, 10. Oh, yeah, I got to switch to the other PC, right? And then there's a folder called testing. So this path, and then standalone testing. What you do is, you see here's a program called standalone export. You just run this in a CMD window, and you say standalone export space E colon, wherever you want, whatever directory you want to put all of the tests in, and it will automatically export everything to the USB key for you. So you can build your own key from a WDK installation. Very good question. Thank you for asking. How big is the key? How big is it? Not terribly big. Let's find out. One 19 megabytes. Small. Okay. Well, I will stay here for a while with Devin and answer your questions, but thank you very, very much for coming. Please come to the labs. 谢谢你.